Here and Now is a production of WBUR Boston in association with the BBC World Service and PRI.
I'm Robin Young. It's Here and Now. President Obama is at Ground Zero today to lay a wreath at the September 11th memorial and to honor the people who died in the attacks on the World Trade Center. This just days after the man believed to be the attack's mastermind was killed by U.S. forces in Pakistan. While in Manhattan, the president had a private lunch with firefighters at Engine 54, Ladder 4, Battalion 9, a firehouse known as the Pride of Midtown because 15 of their men died on 9/11. It's a little difficult to hear. The president spoke over their lunch of eggplant parmesan, but he said the firefighters will always have a president who's got their back.
When we say we will never forget, we mean what we say. And our commitment to making sure that justice was done is something that transcended politics, transcended party.
The president also spoke about the successful hunt for Osama bin Laden.
What happened on Sunday, because of the courage of our military and the outstanding work of our intelligence, sent a message around the world, but also sent a message here back home, that when we say we will never forget, we mean what we say.
President George W. Bush was invited by President Obama to attend today's event. Former First Lady Laura Bush saying that's for President Obama at this time. President Bush did decline. So what impact will this week's raid in Pakistan, in which Navy SEALs working closely with the CIA killed Osama bin Laden, what impact will that have on U.S. military strategy going forward? That's the question we want to take up to start today. And we ask it as Pakistan releases its first statement about the raid, warning of disastrous consequences if the U.S. carries out any other unilateral attacks like it. But how does that square with the argument, especially on the left, that this kind of lean, targeted force, complete with a drone helicopter that could silence rotors and avoid radar, should be the military of the future? That George W. Bush's enhanced interrogations or invasions that led to bin Laden, that's not true. That it was agents on the ground, not boots on the ground. What will the thinking be going forward? And where might the U.S. go? Tom Ricks is with us. He's a senior fellow at the Center for a New American Security and a contributing editor to Foreign Policy magazine. He writes their blog, The Best Defense. Tom, to Pakistan, which today also notified the U.S. that its military personnel in Pakistan would be reduced to minimum essential levels. Now, levels are already pretty low, but what do you make of that and that warning of disastrous consequences if there's another raid? I gather you don't think that's just for consumption by Pakistanis.
I don't think it is. I think Pakistan is quite serious about this. They consider themselves to have been insulted by this raid. And their calculation is that we have nowhere else to go, that they really have us over a barrel, that we can't prosecute the war in Afghanistan without their cooperation because U.S. forces and other forces in Afghanistan are supplied by truck convoys through Pakistan. I think we're going to see that proposition tested. I think that Pakistan really underestimates what an emotional issue this is for Americans, how they feel betrayed by Pakistan, especially because we've given them at least $20 billion in aid and maybe more in covert aid since 9/11. And we find out that bin Laden was essentially living on the doorstep of a major Pakistani military facility, a town, by the way, that has a military checkpoint as you enter it. So you have to go through the military to get there.
Well, so, Tom, you're interpreting this as Pakistan feeling that they are the foreign policy equivalent of too big to fail. But we're also already hearing that Democrats and Republicans are warning against sort of knee-jerk reactions against Pakistan despite these kinds of statements just because they are the main supply route for the U.S. military into Afghanistan.
I think we may need to think about a new relationship with Pakistan, one that moves to a policy of containment. Pakistan's basically really thinks we have nowhere else to go, and I think that's a very dangerous calculation on their part. I think also what you're seeing is one of those situations where the rank and file in the Congress is going to getting out ahead of the leadership. The leadership is saying, don't get given to knee-jerk reactions, don't get emotional. And the rank and file, who tend to be more in touch with the American people, are saying, we're sick of this. And I think 10 years probably is enough of a time to try to give Pakistan, time to show it can work this out.
Well, let's talk a little more strategy before we move to technique, because what exactly are you saying when you say move away from Pakistan towards India, I think you've written, which is very provocative. These are two nuclear-armed countries that hate each other.
Well, begin with Afghanistan. President Obama clearly wants to get out of Afghanistan. Vice President Biden has been the leading figure for arguing for moving to a counter-terror mission in Afghanistan.
And by that, let's be clear, because we get counterterrorism and counterterror mixed up. I mean, you mean these kind of targeted, nimble forces that are just targeting as opposed to winning hearts and minds.
But especially with a very small American footprint, that is to say, small numbers of troops, small supply convoys. If you just had counterterror, special operators and support staff, you could basically supply them with a few truckloads coming in through Central Asia and by air. Once you do that, you're no longer sitting with Pakistan holding a knife to your throat, saying, I'm your best friend, I just happen to hold a knife to your throat. So then you don't need Pakistan as much. Will you be successful in Afghanistan? Probably not. But that said, Americans think it's time to get out of Afghanistan. Americans' attitude is, look, we went in response to 9/11. We got bin Laden. Al-Qaeda is really an institution of the past. Nobody's paying attention to it in the Arab world right now. Time has passed them by. So, yeah, the future of America in that part of the world is India. They're the country with whom we should have a strategic alliance. You know, if Pakistan wants to have a great relationship with China, you know, knock yourselves out, guys. Pakistan is a failed state with ruling elites that are enormously corrupt and are not acting either in the American interest or the interest of their own people. Why we should continue to support that, I don't know.
Well, but you say that one problem with switching this thinking to this leaner, more muscular, less of a footprint force in Afghanistan in particular, and then you don't need the pathway from Pakistan. Two problems that I'm wondering about. One, you've told us that one of the ways you get this lean, mean force into a country is that you hide them among the combat boots on the ground. And secondly, you know, what happens if the people you're actually trying to go after are in Pakistan?
Well, I think you do what we're doing now. One of the things that's not really come out much is that we are flying a stealthy drone reconnaissance aircraft, an unmanned reconnaissance aircraft, out of the Kandahar airport. There's no reason to have a stealthy reconnaissance drone in Afghanistan because Taliban don't have air defenses. The ability to detect and shoot down aircraft. So we're probably flying that drone into Pakistan already.
Yeah.
And I think you might move to a more overtly hostile relationship. Stop treating Pakistan like a frenemy and treat them more like a hostile state that is not acting in our interest. You might have people based in Afghanistan conducting unilateral raids into Pakistan.
Well, and what about the disastrous consequences that Pakistan warned about?
Well, I think the disastrous consequences are probably inevitable. So I would rather get out ahead of them and act first. Pakistan, when it starts making this sort of threat, is hinting, you know, you might have a quote-unquote spontaneous demonstration that turns into a mob that burns down your embassy. You might see your convoys stopped or blown up. Well, if that's going to happen, that's not a friendly act. That's a hostile threat. And we should not take kindly to that. We should anticipate it. And I think maybe pull back from Pakistan, go to this counterterror operation in Afghanistan, which is where the president wants to go anyway, as he draws down forces there, and go after al-Qaeda in Pakistan as necessary. Remember, the United States has indicated that they captured a lot of intelligence information in the raid on bin Laden. That indicates that probably there are more raids in the offing against al-Qaeda. So what you're having with this threat from the head of the Pakistani military is a statement that they intend to prevent us from acting against further al-Qaeda targets in Pakistan.
Well, by the way, you mentioned this the way this new military force that's counterterror might be operating, and you've mentioned this. You mentioned the stealth helicopters and drones. Let's just take 1 second on that. Sunday's raid was the first use of a stealth helicopter that we know, because this is the one that crashed and was burned. It was made out of high-tech cloth. It looks like a snub-nosed drone. Here's ABC's Brian Ross describing how stealth it is. Let's listen.
This is what a standard Black Hawk helicopter sounds like. This is the sound of an earlier experimental version of a stealth helicopter.
Much quieter. And Tom Ricks, we're hearing that the one that crashed at the compound was also able to avoid radar, was practically silent. And the Internet is apparently abuzz over this news of this stealth helicopter. Is this what you're talking about, part of actually, a quieter, smaller footprint?
Well, yeah. It is, in fact, literally quieter. The stealth drone flown out of Kandahar, which looks like a small version of the B-2 bomber, which is a stealth bomber, that was a fixed-wing aircraft. The stealth helicopter is basically a special operations version, a modified version of the Army Blackhawk, which is sort of the workhorse kind of Lexus. Not a nice helicopter, but the standard helicopter, today's Army. I think what they did is they took a lot of the technological advances they picked up in building the Comanche, which was an Army attack helicopter program that was canceled, and they've applied those into the special operations helicopters. You're never going to make a helicopter entirely stealthy, but you can do things. Stealth is not just defeating radar. It's also reducing the heat signature, so heat-seeking missiles have a harder time finding it. You do that by putting the exhaust on top of the vehicle or in mixing in cooler air with the hot air at the exhaust vent. There's a number of ways you reduce radar signature, heat signature, visual signature.
Well, this is why this was so important to the U.S. The Pakistanis originally put a screen around this stealth copter after U.S. forces tried to destroy it to sort of keep some of this new technology, a secret. But then the Pakistanis apparently hauled it off in a truck. And as Brian Ross also said, you can bet that helicopter's on its way to China. Tom Ricks, you mentioned Pakistan running into the arms of China. Tom Ricks, a senior fellow at the Center for a New American Security, contributing editor to Foreign Policy magazine. He writes their blog, The Best Defense. We're talking about the impact of Sunday's raid in Pakistan that killed Osama bin Laden on both U.S. policy and U.S. military strategy and techniques going forward. By the way, more news about that raid. As we've been saying, the information always changes. Now, we'd heard that Osama bin Laden was shot and killed in a firefight. Today, a senior defense official says only one of the five Pakistanis killed in the raid was armed, and that one, it was the only one that ever fired a shot, and it was on ground level. The official says that shooter was killed in the early minutes of the commando assault, which really differs from the original reports of a chaotic, prolonged firefight and stiff resistance. But this official who spoke anonymously said these new details were emerging after officials had time to debrief the Navy SEALs who were actually pulled off the raid. And the official also said the operation was a precision floor-by-floor mission through bin Laden's compound, where all of the others encountered were not carrying weapons and were quickly eliminated. Also, Michelle Flourney, the top policy aide to Defense Secretary Robert Gates, says the U.S. has no definitive evidence that Pakistan knew Osama bin Laden was there, but she said they must now demonstrate convincingly their commitment to defeating al-Qaeda, maybe by helping the U.S. exploit material the SEALs collected. When we come back, more from Tom Ricks on all of this here and now.
Funding for Here and Now comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink technical computing software, dedicated to accelerating the pace of discovery in engineering and science worldwide. On the web at MathWorks.com.
Welcome back. We're talking with Tom Ricks, a military analyst, about the way forward for the U.S. military after Sunday night's raid in Pakistan that killed Osama bin Laden. Tom, of course, senior fellow at the Center for a New American Security, contributing editor to Foreign Policy magazine. He writes their blog, The Best Defense. We've been talking about some new technology that raid revealed for us, the stealth helicopter that was used in the raid. We're also hearing about new espionage technology, being able to detect slight movements in window panes produced by people talking, and you can count the vibrations and therefore know the number of people inside. You know, the raid has revealed incredible stuff. But Tom Ricks, weigh in on the renewed debate over, if you will, old techniques, the whole debate over methods that might have gotten information that led to the raid on Sunday night. Torture, waterboarding, harsh and enhanced interrogation such as sleep deprivation. As we said at the outset, people on the right crowing that that's what ultimately brought us to Osama bin Laden. Others like, Dianne Feinstein of the Senate Intelligence Committee saying, no, it had nothing to do with it.
I have a hard time with this entire debate. I never thought I'd live in a country where people would want to officially endorse torture. I think it's a big mistake because you end up undermining the reason you're fighting. We're supposedly fighting for our values, and one of the values is we don't torture people. It also is stupid tactically. If we start torturing people, then we're going to increase the likelihood that Americans captured in combat are going to be tortured. Finally, it's also stupid tactically because it backfires. The biggest single recruiting technique for Al-Qaeda and for other anti-American groups has been Guantanamo and the sense of Americans using torture and how profoundly insulting that has been. Was information gotten at Guantanamo? There's no question it was gotten. Would the information have been gathered in other ways? We don't know because they didn't try. They panicked, and they went unprofessional. If you talk to professional interrogators, they'll tell you that torturing people is really stupid. It actually increases the cohesion of the enemy, and you can never trust the information you get. Professional interrogators will tell you that the classic way to get information is to have knowledge and to treat people with respect. In fact, the best Nazi interrogator of World War II was a guy famous for sitting down with downed American flyers and just talking to them like a friend and giving them cigarettes and showing that he knew more about the U.S. Air Force than they did.
But Tom Ricks, as abhorrent as it is, isn't it important to you as a defense analyst just to know what the truth is? And you know, we thought we had heard that when Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, the 9/11 mastermind, the architect, was waterboarded, the worst form of torture, it was thought...
Nearly a couple of hundred times.
Yeah. It was thought that the information gotten was not good. And now we're hearing, Donald Rumsfeld and New York Republican Peter King saying that that's what brought us to Osama bin Laden. On the other hand, you have Dianne Feinstein, as I said, saying none of that was gotten, none of the information was gotten through harsh or enhanced interrogation, which also included, humiliation, maybe some slapping. I know it's an abhorrent conversation, but is it important to you to know what's true?
No, because you won't know what's true. My point is they got information through torture, but they can never know whether they would have gotten that information faster and better through other, more professional, time-tested methods. Torture is not a professional method of interrogation. Torture is what you do when you panic. And what they can never deny is that the Bush administration panicked after 9/11.
All right. Well, for some, you know, they're still trying to map out what's true, what's not true. And it feels as if... that's the other thing about this story. It changes every day. But it feels as if we're hearing that there was not reliable information gleaned from the harsh methods. But I take your point. I just want to move on to ask...
There's also just a whole lot of BS out there about this raid and everything else.
Well, that's true, too.
I don't trust a lot of what I'm hearing about it.
Do you think that it's BS? Or do you think that it's just the fog of raid?
No, I think there's a lot of disinformation being provided, which is exactly what I would do. If I didn't capture any hard drives in this raid, I would let it be known that I had captured hard drives. You want to confuse the enemy. You also want to confuse the Pakistani government as to your intentions, because frankly, this raid should be read as an operation directed at the Pakistani security establishment. They knew, at least some of them, where bin Laden was, and so they were part of the target.
Huh. Well, and just quickly, the raid was, and we now know, led by CIA Director Leon Panetta, not Defense Secretary Robert Gates, although we know Leon Panetta's moving over. It was conducted by the secretive Navy SEAL Team 6. That's the CIA's, you know, it's been called the CIA's Praetorian Guard, a highly secretive military wing of the Joint Special Operations Command, you know, oversees them. What do you read into that, especially going forward? This, you know, obviously the CIA and the military have worked closely together before, but this was so exposed here.
Well, under the Rumsfeld regime, you actually had enormous friction, institutional, between the Pentagon, the State Department, and the intelligence people. Rumsfeld was fighting over who had the right to tell people what to do. You're actually seeing genuine cooperation here. You want that. Now, you want things to be done legally, but you also want the various arms of the U.S. government to be fighting the enemy, not each other. It's not a bad thing to have close cooperation between the intelligence people and the military people.
Well, what about oversight?
Type of operation.
Well, what about oversight? The National Journal, you know, writing about how the JSOC, again, the Joint Special Operations Command, escaping congressional scrutiny, are operating with impunity.
I'm not sure they are. I think they were doing in this raid exactly what they should be doing. When they do bad things, that generally gets out. For example, when a Navy SEAL raid in Afghanistan by mistake killed a British citizen, one of the people they're trying to rescue, that came out pretty quickly.
Tom, I got to make sure I, you know, in the few seconds we have, do you think they got hard drives from that raid on Sunday?
I really don't know.
Yeah. To be continued. Thomas Ricks, Senior Fellow at the Center for a New American Security, contributing editor to Foreign Policy Magazine. Be sure and check out his blog, The Best Defense. Tom Ricks, thank you.
You're welcome.
We're going to take a break. Latest news is next, here and now.
Support for Here and Now comes from the listeners of WBUR Boston, where the program is produced. Hinckley, Allen & Snyder, where partners have been giving clients practical legal advice for over 100 years throughout New England and now including Connecticut, online at haslaw.com. And the Institute of Contemporary Art on the Boston waterfront. Discover the power and beauty of new art and ideas, icaboston.org.